You're listening to The Birdbath, presented by The Fountain Report. I'm your host, Ryan Leach. Welcome back to The Birdbath. Each week, we scrape the surface of the news you need to know, so let's get into it. You could have guessed our top story this week, which everyone has been talking about, and that is the Federal Trade Commission has announced a new rule on non-competes. The FTC has said that it's an unfair method of competition and therefore a violation of Section 5, which we all know, of the FTC Act for employers to enter into non-compete clauses with workers. As a result, the final rule generally bars most non-compete agreements. Now, this is huge. This is something big that, you know, has far-reaching implications. It's not just about veterinary medicine, right? This is huge across all industries, everything across North America or across the United States. But let's think about this just in the veterinary landscape. So first off, peel it back and let's understand a bit about what the non-compete clauses are, what the FTC was looking at, who's covered, who's not covered. So stick with me here. So what the FTC is saying is that having a non-compete clause is an unfair method of competition for a person to enter into or attempt to enter into, for a business to enforce or attempt to enforce, or to represent that the worker is subject to a non-compete clause. So not only trying to get into one, enforcing one, or even suggesting or representing that someone is involved in one. Now, there's a ton of coverage, and the majority of it is coverage for what the FTC calls workers. Now, a worker is pretty much anyone that does work, right? The list there is much longer than who isn't covered by this new rule from the FTC. So who isn't covered that would matter to veterinary medicine? Franchisees that are covered under a franchisee-franchisor relationship are not part of this ban, as people are calling it, on non-compete. So if you're a franchisee, if you have, especially in the vet space, right, if you are a franchisee of one of the companies that does grooming or one of the many veterinary groups that has this as a business model, you still are going to be bound by that franchisee-franchisor relationship. Senior executives with what FTC calls policy-making authority. And so policy-making authority is kind of legal terms, but basically that is the C-suite in large corporations that gets to make the decisions that affect the entire company. It's not people that just are tangentially associated with that. There is some questions or potential ambiguity around if a medical director within a independently owned practice would be a senior executive with policy-making authority, but that's something to dig into much later and after all of this has shaken out. And then the final one, and this is one for a lot of people in the veterinary landscape, especially as we've seen the increase of consolidation, but the rule, or which is the ban, does not apply to a non-compete agreement that is entered into by a person in a bona fide sale of a business, of the person's ownership interest in a business, or of all a business operating assets. So if you sold your veterinary practice to a large corporate group or to anyone, doesn't have to be a corporate group, right? If you sold your business or your veterinary clinic to someone else, and as part of that agreement, you had to sign a non-compete, you are still going to be bound by that non-compete. And now this is probably the time where I put all the asterisks all over everything I'm saying. And I'm not an attorney. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a FTC advocate or advisor or anybody, but what I'm reading here and what I'm trying to keep everyone up to date is there are things that still are putting those handcuffs on what some people are doing. And it makes sense when you think about it in that sense. So people that are going to be available to work how, when, and wherever they want, right, are veterinarians that maybe signed a non-compete clause that has kept them from being able to leave a practice and go and work somewhere else down the street. That does not change your non-solicitation, so you can't take your clients. It does not change your non-disclosure agreements, so you can't take proprietary information from a business, but you are able to have free movement of where you work. So the final rule will become effective 120 days after it's published in what they call the Federal Register. So that's happened. So we're expecting late August, early October that this would happen. Now, the rule is already being challenged in court. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has filed suit against the FTC in the U.S. District Court, and the expectation is that this litigation will at least delay and potentially invalidate the rule. But a lot of different pundits and different advisors that I've read about are thinking that the FTC will be able to get this enforced and not have the rule overturned. So why? Why does this matter, right? Who cares? This is great, but what are the financial impacts of this? The FTC, granted, they're in favor of this. So the numbers that they're putting out, though, are that they say that it's going to reduce healthcare costs by $74 to $194 billion by reducing spending on physician services over the next decade. They expect to see 2.7% increase in the rate of new businesses being formed, and that will result in 8,500 additional businesses created each year. So huge, huge, huge numbers there, because I think, you know, if you've ever been part of a non-compete, you maybe had an idea or something that formed as something that you saw didn't work well in the company you're at, but you had those handcuffs to keep you from being able to be innovative. And now the next thing the FTC says is they see a rise in innovation, an average of 17,000 to 29,000 more patents each year for the next 10 years. And that's a 11 to 19% annual increase in number of patents. Additionally, they're expecting to see an increase in wages for workers, as they like to call us, right? $400 to $488 billion in increase in wages for workers over the next decade. Now, don't get to divide that by the total population. They're expecting a rise of about $524 per year for the average worker's compensation. But still, it's a space where it allows people maybe not to just earn more, but to be able to continue earning money in a job that they're excited about or in a field that they want to continue to pursue without having to be shuffled around. So if you're looking for more information on this, I'm going to link the American Veterinary Medical Law Association in the show notes. They are lawyers, so you should listen to their opinion. Don't listen to me just taking this as a grain of salt. It's something that I think is very important and very exciting to be able to see. I know a lot of people, especially people in the vet industry, worked really hard to try and petition for that to happen. Some more big news for Zoetis, whose stock has actually started trending upward. They have decided to sell their medicated feed additive, or MFA, portfolio to Phibro Animal Health. So the business and the sale here is expected to be a $400 million revenue driver for Zoetis. It's what they saw from this business last year. And they're expecting that this sale will close by the second half of this year. This big, big, big deal, which we don't have the exact numbers on what the sale price is, but the deal will make Phibro the sixth largest animal health player by revenue, which their revenue would grow to $1.4 billion. So they would be a massive, massive player. So the details of the deal are that Phibro is acquiring 37 MFAs and water-soluble product lines, which in turn gave $400 million of revenue to Zoetis just in 2023. It spans across the entire globe. They're in 80 countries with these. About half of them are in poultry. The other half are in swine and beef. And 55% of this revenue, though, comes from the U.S. market as well. So Phibro is going to grow to be a massive, massive player. And the exact price of the sale is not disclosed. But what we do know is that it's said to be financed with debt with no equity dilution. So the rationale and maybe some of the thoughts behind why this matters was that the Phibro is looking to increase and drive the growth of their business. And Zoetis obviously has a large share of this. So the other really big thing is that Zoetis has brought their manufacturing costs to a great place. And so their margins are in the low 20% compared to Phibro, which has about 11% margin. So by acquiring Zoetis's line here, they're going to be able to drive up their margins and be able to make more money. So the cash generation here will allow them to grow more, continue to participate in it. And also in the agreement, they're picking up six manufacturing sites, which four are in the US, one's in Italy, and one's in China. Of the Zoetis colleagues, the expectation is that about 300 Zoetis employees are going to be moving over to become Phibro's employees now. But why did Zoetis do this? Well, this is something that maybe we've hit a little bit more on, right? You guys know I'm not an ag health person all the time, but I am trying to learn more about it. But Zoetis is looking at this as an opportunity to divest a portion of their livestock investments, and it'll allow them to better focus on the other solutions like vaccines, biologic, and genetic programs that they do in the livestock space. So those more traditional non-MFA product lines are also things that you could expect to see trickle down perhaps into companion animal, which is where we're seeing companies like Zoetis, Pfizer, and some of the others really double down on their commitment. So the CEO of Zoetis, Kristen Peck, said, "We remain committed to providing innovative solutions to our livestock customers. We believe that the long-term value of the transferred portfolio will be fully realized with Phibro Animal Health, which will continue to expand its reach given their strong relationship with customers worldwide." Seems like something very interesting, super cool. I'm always blown away by the absolute breadth of size that Zoetis's portfolio has when you see that they're divesting $400 million of annual revenue and their stock's going up. So great news there. In other spectacular news, CityVet has announced that they're partnered with ReadyVetGo to enhance mentorship and support for new veterinarians. CityVet, which is based in my hometown here of Dallas, Texas, has a network of 36 veterinary-owned practices, and they take care of people, and they've been doing this for quite a while. They've been in business over the last 25 years, and right now they've just announced this big partnership with ReadyVetGo, which is a mentorship program that's designed to help new and early career veterinarians. The quote that sort of put it into my mind and understanding what the vision of this was from the lead veterinarian at a CityVet location, Christine Deek. And she said, "ReadyVetGo equips new grads with the tools needed for success. I've participated in various initiatives aimed at recent graduates, and without a doubt, ReadyVetGo stands out as the sole program that not only instills a sense of empowerment in new graduates, but also equips them with the necessary tools for success in their inaugural year and beyond." Very interesting here. I think the idea that new veterinarians are coming out and in many ways that what we're seeing are not fully equipped to be in practice or to deal with a lot of the additional things that come outside of just the practicing of medicine, but with the things around time management, the ways to ask for help within the practice, the mental strains and the constraints that we're seeing there. So in a world where we're seeing a shortage of veterinarians, it's really interesting and super important. And you know, kudos to CityVet here for finding a partner that's going to allow them to increase the mentorship to be able to have these new graduates continue in the industry. The nuts and bolts of it are that CityVet has integrated ReadyVetGo's mentorship into their onboarding process. So they want to make sure that every new veterinarian gains that additional layer of support, which is big. It's an outside company that you can reach out to and be able to grow from, learn more from, and participate with. So really cool. If you've had an opportunity to work with either one of these companies, I'd love to hear your feedback. I personally really like the team at CityVet. I think they do a great job and was glad to hear more about ReadyVetGo. Finally, World Veterinary Day. Now, that was just this last weekend, but I would be remiss to not take a second and give appreciation to all the veterinarians across the world. I've got two in my in-law side of the family. So to all the veterinarians out there, everyone that listens and everyone that even goes to the vet or has anything, if you're not going to the vet, but you're listening to the show, I don't know how you got here, but I'm happy to have you. But World Veterinarian Day was wonderful. And thank you so much to everyone. Take a second to, you know, if you are working with veterinarians and you're not in clinic or doing this every day, take a second to just, you know, think about the load. The things that we're talking about here can overshadow in a lot of ways the weight that comes with being a practitioner. And so thank you, though. But to everyone that's a veterinarian, thank you, thank you, thank you. Without you all, we would not have an industry to be able to participate with. And more importantly, the animals and the pets that we love. So thank you. For more on these and other stories, join us by subscribing to The Fountain Report. There's always a link in the bio. And don't miss out on any episodes by subscribing and rating the show. For The Birdbath, I'm Ryan Leach. See you next week.